As we heard earlier, schools and childcare facilities are still figuring out reopening, and our physical environment has changed rapidly since Memorial Day. Eateries are opening with outdoor seating, retail stores are open, playgrounds, splash pools. And at the same time, we're in the fourth week of protests and demonstrations against police violence and racism here in Boston and around the country. So we thought you might have questions about coronavirus, reopening, safety, testing. What do you need to know? Call with your questions at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. We have two doctors with us today to help answer those questions and have this conversation. The first is Dr. Rochelle Walensky. She's a professor of medicine at Harvard Medical School, a practicing infectious disease physician at Massachusetts General Hospital and Brigham and Women's Hospital. Welcome back to Radio Boston, Dr. Walensky.
Great. Thanks so much for having me.
And with us is Dr. Helen Boucher, Chief of the Division of Geographic Medicine and Infectious Diseases at Tufts Medical Center. She's also Treasurer of the Infectious Diseases Society of America. Thanks for being with us again, Dr. Boucher.
Thanks for having me, Tiziana. Nice to be with you.
So it's been a little while since we've talked to the two of you, and I hadn't originally planned to ask you this question first, but I'm gonna because I'm the host and I get to ask what I want to first. What has changed most for you in your understanding of the virus or in what you're focusing on in, let's say, the last 3 weeks? Dr. Boucher.
Well, that's a really good question. And I think that probably the most prominent focus has been on the mitigation measures that seem to be the most impactful in helping to prevent the spread of the virus. So that includes focusing on when we're going to be social, doing it outside, still maintaining the physical distance and using masks. I think the data on masks continues to emerge that they work. Covering our face works. And so we had some new data yesterday talking about the difference between exposures inside and outside, and it shows again that being outside lowers the risk of any exposure that you could have. So as we're in this reopening phase, those are two areas I think that require more focus and are hopeful in some ways.
And Dr. Walensky, how about you?
Great. You know, I'm going to take the other side of that coin. Since Dr. Boucher spoke about mitigation and the environment, maybe I'll talk about what we're learning in some of the science. But not that that's not science, but in terms of how we treat the virus, there's been some exciting news about vaccines and some launching of some vaccine trials that are probably going to happen in the middle of the summer. We've learned something about remdesivir, hydroxychloroquine, and now dexamethasone as recent as today. And then some prevention interventions, the hydroxychloroquine prevention studies that came out. So I think we're learning a lot in the science of how we might vaccinate and how we might treat.
All right, before we go to calls, and they are starting to come in fast, because you brought up remdesivir, dexamethasone, hydroxychloroquine, can you just quickly, either or both of you, give us a rundown on where we stand in sort of effective and promising or not on all three of those? And those, let me clarify, as I understand it, all three are about treatment, not prevention.
It's true. Maybe I'll start with one and pass it to Dr. Boucher. So hydroxychloroquine, we learned last week that the NIH panel has recommended against the use of hydroxychloroquine for the treatment of coronavirus. There have been now lots of large observational studies that have not shown efficacy. We still wait a large-scale clinical trial, although smaller clinical trials have also not shown efficacy, and it has shown some harm in terms of abnormal heart rhythms. We also had one smaller clinical trial for hydroxychloroquine that demonstrated it didn't work for prevention. So maybe then I'll pass one of the other two to Dr. Boucher.
Great.
Dr. Boucher.
Sure, I'll mention the dexamethasone. So data just emerged today from a study done in the United Kingdom by a group from Oxford that showed that using dexamethasone for 10 days in patients who were sick with COVID compared to using standard therapy resulted in a mortality survival benefit. And the protection was greatest in the sickest patients. So patients on ventilators were received the most benefit from this really simple and inexpensive drug, to the point where one death could be prevented by treating 8 COVID-infected patients on ventilators with this medicine. So that is, I would say, a potential game changer. and something that can be implemented, and is probably the first trial to show a mortality benefit in this disease. So it's big news, I would say.
And will remdesivir, I know remdesivir has been in trials here in the Commonwealth. Are these dexamethasone, remdesivir, are these drugs that are available in the healthcare network here in the Commonwealth, things that will, as they're better proven and or embraced, if they are, that they'll be available to people here?
I would say the good news is that dexamethasone is readily available and it's inexpensive. I still think we need to see the data from these from the study that Dr. Boucher is citing, that those are fresh data from today that were released in press release, but we haven't seen the paper yet. We haven't seen any of data yet. Remdesivir is a little harder to access. It's emergency use authorization. It's not yet FDA approved, and it's only made by one company with limited supply. It's been distributed through Massachusetts through the country, but we're pretty cautious about who we're giving it to right now, and we're giving it early in disease. Dexamethasone, as Dr. Boucher suggested, we're giving later in disease. So I think they each have their own place in the disease process, but remdesivir we have less access to for sure than we do dexamethasone.
All right, let's start turning to some calls. What are your calls for Drs. Walensky and Boucher today? 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. Let's start with Debbie in Randolph. Debbie, go ahead.
Hello. I have been seeing my grandchildren at a distance in the driveway and backyards. I was wondering when we could spend more time together, maybe even give them a hug.
Oh, Debbie, you're breaking my heart. Please, Drs. Walensky and Boucher.
You want to take that?
Yeah, this is really hard, Debbie, and I'm sorry. You know, the evidence that we have is that grandparents and older people, as well as people who have underlying health conditions, things like diabetes, heart disease, are at the greatest risk for doing poorly with COVID. We also have data that children and really young adults tend to be the ones who get infected and can spread the disease. So we're still recommending keeping some distance from the grandkids. And so I think that the driveway visiting and doing creative things on FaceTime are the best and the most safe ways until we get a little further down the road to keep you the safest. Dr. Walensky, what do you think?
I completely agree. And the only thing I would add to that is to understand what your family's risk is. So if everybody's kind of been home quarantining for 2 weeks, it's probably the case that they're have low risk, right? However, if the parents have been out, if the kids have been in daycare, if the kids have been mixing with other kids, then I completely agree with what Dr. Boucher is saying, and probably safest to be outside and enjoy them from afar.
Let's grab another call here. 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. We have Lisa on the line from Wellesley. Lisa, go ahead.
Hi, we are planning an annual family vacation where we have family members coming together from different parts of the country. And, we've been kind of monitoring the different phases of the reopening, and we're trying to come up with a way to bring people in. Some are flying by plane from California, some are driving from states in the South. And we're just kind of wondering, is it okay to share a house together or should we not? And, should we try to get tested before we come together? And would that give us any kind of assurance that maybe we wouldn't be putting each other at risk? Or what would you recommend for that type of a family trip or attempts to have that kind of a family trip?
That's a question for a lot of people this summer. Please go ahead.
I totally endorse family vacations, and I think all of us are feeling the same tension. And this very much goes back to some of the comments I made from the previous caller, and that is, how have all of the families who are coming together been behaving? Has everybody been equally careful? Has everybody really generally been staying home, really been trying to socially distance, wearing their masks, asymptomatic? Are people generally healthy? So if one were to get infected, are they at lower risk? Are they generally generally younger? And then really, how can you be safest while you're traveling? If you're traveling through airports, trying to sort of maintain some distance on the plane, certainly wearing masks on the plane, but also in the airport itself, trying to stay away from touch surfaces, trying to stay away from crowds. The airports are probably more of a challenge than the airplanes themselves because the airplanes have great air circulation. Similar to the folks who are driving, trying to stay away from you know, rest stops and things where you might have touch surfaces would probably be your safest bet.
And Dr. Boucher, what about after Lisa's vacation? And part of the reason I'm asking is I know we have at least one other caller who's got a similar question about, you know, siblings all coming together under one roof. So Dr. Walensky's given us some sense for how do you think about going into that kind of vacation. What about afterward?
Well, another great question. And I think after any potential exposure, and really almost any exposure as we open up socially, the greatest risk is in the about first 5 days, but the risk goes out to 14 days. And so really monitoring for symptoms and getting tested if you develop any symptoms, even mild symptoms, and then making sure to stay away from anyone who's at risk. So back to what Dr. Walensky was saying, if you return home to your own home, you know, keep your distance from older relatives and friends and others who might be at risk due to underlying medical conditions.
1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. We've got Holly on the line from Newton. Holly, what's your question?
Hi, thanks for taking my call. My question is regarding pregnancy and trying to get pregnant during the time of COVID. My partner and I started trying at a clinic just before in February and in March, and we just got the go-ahead to start trying again. But from a doctor's perspective of being pregnant and potentially going back to work in the fall, where I work with a lot of young children, just curious about if there's been anything new about risks to pregnancy.
Great question.
There are not a ton of data in pregnancy that demonstrate that outcomes for pregnant women are worse than any other. And so I think medical systems are generally safe places to be. So in terms of accessing the clinic, that's actually quite a safe place. It should be a safe place. We're encouraging people to come back to medical care, but in general. And then I would say there are not a lot of data to suggest that your pregnancy would be at higher risk. We are suggesting that pregnant women perhaps stop working in medical systems at 37 weeks, just in case. But for the most part, there are not a lot of data to suggest that now is not a good time to get pregnant.
So Drs. Boucher and Walensky, before I go back to additional calls, there are a couple other things I want to make sure we also ask around some current events. We know that we are several weeks now into large public protests. We're also several weeks into reopening. Both are going to bring people into greater proximity with each other. Have you seen anything in the hospitals to indicate whether we're at risk of increased spread from either type of increased contact with each other? I think our numbers are staying low. Is that what you're seeing in the hospitals as well?
We're seeing, you know, continued decline in the numbers of both infected individuals being hospitalized and dying from COVID, which is really good news. It is important to point out that it's usually 2 to 3 weeks after exposures of the type we're discussing where we would see things like hospitalizations. So it's a little bit early. And I'll also mention that Governor Baker has, in recognition of these potential exposures, made arrangements for testing at 52 sites across Massachusetts tomorrow and Thursday that will be available confidentially and at no cost to people who were at these large events. So that it is really encouraging people to be tested so that we can recognize any infection early and stop the spread before it, you know, occurs and becomes a bigger problem. So really want to encourage folks who feel like they might have been exposed to take advantage of that opportunity.
We had a physician on maybe a week and a half ago who expressed some concern that if we do see a spike in cases, because these two trends were coincidental, the phase two of reopening and the emergence of large-scale protests here in the Commonwealth, that people who were protesting might get scapegoated for spread that wasn't a result of those protests. And from a contact tracing standpoint, et cetera, do we have enough information now that if we do see spikes, we'll know where they come from so that we can adjust accordingly?
I think that's going to be tough. Contact tracing is a laborious task, and it's going to be hard, especially when people might have been both in the protests as well as in other places related to the reopening. What I will say is, especially looking at footage from other places around the country and being involved in some of the conversations about how Massachusetts has been handling these protests, first, I want to convey how horrific it is that we are in a coincidence of these two pandemics related to both COVID-19 and racism. I think it's really important that these protest voices are heard. And for the most part, it has been done in such a way that is intended to keep people safe, that people are remaining safe, that people are wearing masks, and that there's access to testing. So I think in the context of the fact that these are critical voices to hear, that it's being done in as safe a way.
Okay, and in our last couple of minutes, I won't have time to go back to more calls, but I will summarize at least one or two of the questions. One theme in the questions is eating together. Whether you're at a sidewalk cafe or maybe you're now thinking of having family over for a meal, obviously you are not wearing a mask while you're eating. So how does one think about safety as we begin to eat in congregate again?
You know, this is really important, Tiziana, and I think that you know, the basics of trying to set the places as far apart as we can, eat outside if we can, not share dishes, utensils, glasses, and really, to the extent possible, have things served individually. That will limit the potential risk, not make it zero, but will make it lower. I think those are some good initial first steps. Dr. Walensky, other thoughts?
The only thing I would add is to make sure everyone is symptom-free.
Okay, and so just last question we do, briefly, 30 seconds or so. What is the status of antibody testing? Are we getting more reliable there?
My short answer is we still have a lot to learn. There are still rates of false positives, still rates of false negatives. We also don't know exactly what they mean, but our learning curve is steep and we're learning more every day.
Agree.
All right. Well, no, please go ahead and finish that thought.
Yeah, no, I agree fully. We are very, you know, we're gratified that the science is advancing. We needed to come a little further before it's ready for sort of prime time to be used in individual cases. Antibody testing is very helpful in understanding what's happening in a population or a community. So we're grateful to have it. We need the science to advance a little bit more for us.
Well, this has been so helpful. Dr. Rochelle Walensky, Dr. Helen Boucher, I really appreciate you joining us to answer callers' questions today. Thank you.
Pleasure to be here. Thank you.
Thank you.
And that's our show for today. Radio Boston is a production of 90.9 WBUR, Boston's NPR news station. I'm Tiziana Deering. Join us again tomorrow for more Radio Boston.